Being prepared for natural disasters. Quick, what do you think is the number one risk to your home? Fire? Nope. According to insurance experts, it's flooding. And inland flooding is as great an issue as coastal flooding. This is just one of the important considerations to think about when planning for natural disasters. Others include wind damage, as September 10th marks the peak of the Atlantic hurricane season, and fire, as we've seen the impact of drought in California and other states. I'm Jennifer Rooks. As the climate changes, it is more important than ever to assess the risks of natural disaster to your home and family. Today on Maine Calling, the superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance and the deputy director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency answer your questions about being prepared. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A natural disaster can strike at any time, and as difficult as it might be to think of the damage a disaster might do, it is important to have a plan in place. That's what we're talking about today. My guests are Eric Chapa, who is superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance, and Joe Legee, deputy director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency, or MEMA. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you and your family have a plan? Is there anything in particular that you're worried about? Is there an insurance question you'd like to ask Superintendent Chapa? You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Again, a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both so much for joining us. And John, Joe, I'll start with you. We haven't had a hurricane or droughts this season like other parts of the country have, but it has been, I understand, a busy year for you at MEMA. Tell us about your year so far.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer, and excited to talk to you today and talk to everyone today. It has been a busy year, and I don't want to start off the conversation talking about COVID-19, but certainly that's kept us busy at Maine Emergency Management so far this year. We've had several other events that have come up, not to include sharks as well off the
coast
of Maine. So a number of things have come up this year. We actually are in the middle of what we've been terming an acute drought right now. So we do have a drought task force that is active and monitoring conditions on a biweekly basis. And then, of course, it is hurricane season right now, so we are keeping an eye on those major storms.
And even though there haven't been hurricanes or tropical storms, we've seen some pretty widespread power outages.
That's true, and that's something that comes up frequently, whether it's a hurricane, a tropical storm, straight-line winds, a winter storm. Power outage across the state is something that we always want to be prepared for, something that we're always cognizant of and responding to. With our partners in the private sector in particular.
Eric, as insurance superintendent, what keeps you up at night?
Well, a lot of things. But as it relates to natural disasters, do people understand what they're covered for? Do they understand they're not covered for? And that's particularly important when we're talking about something like flood insurance. Floods, much to people's surprise, when they have a claim, is not covered under your homeowner's insurance. And my biggest takeaway is people really need to review their coverages, talk to their agent, and understand what they're covered for and what they're not covered for, and then they can act appropriately. I mean, floods, as I said before, floods are not covered, but you can purchase flood insurance. And I understand we have a speaker coming up who can talk more about that. But it's really reviewing what your insurance is a way to protect your assets and protect your family. But you don't want to assume anything about it. You want to go over, understand what you're covered for. And I think that's the biggest takeaway I want people to go away from this discussion is review their policy and ask questions of either their agent or call my bureau and ask questions. But I can't stress that enough.
How often do you recommend that somebody review their policy?
I would say annually for a couple of reasons, Jennifer. One, you can shop your policy. It's an incredibly competitive market in homeowners insurance in Maine, and you can maybe find a better deal for more coverage. But again, I think annually, you know, you could have put an addition on your house, or some other circumstances could have changed. And you want to make sure your coverage is up to date, because again, as we've seen from wildfires in California, people have found they're underinsured, but they found out after the fact, and that's the worst place and the worst circumstance a family can find themselves in.
Joe, turning back to you, I'm going to ask about some of the, you mentioned already the drought task force looking at the drought here in Maine. We see one of the horrible effects of drought in California have been these historic wildfires. Is that one of the worries for you all at MEMA?
You know, that's, we were worried, especially during the particularly dry spring, that a wildfire was going to be a pretty significant threat. And Maine Forest Service was certainly keeping an eye on that and moving resources around to be better prepared for that. Since then, I think we're a little bit less concerned about major wildfires, and we're really looking at some pretty severe impacts to agricultural products and farms, particularly in the northern part of the state up in Aroostook County, but also developing in some other parts of the state.
One of the things, Joe, I was interested in learning is that, you know, we think about flooding when there's a big tropical storm, and especially when it coincides with a full moon and a high tide, but that much of the flooding is not coastal, but inland. Tell me what kind of flooding causes the most problems in Maine, where and when we see it.
So you're right, and a lot of that flooding and connecting it back to that point about the drought, after we have these particularly dry periods, and then we get a significant rain event directly after that, you can see a lot of erosion and a lot of inland flooding in areas that have been dry for a very long time, and areas that people are often less prepared for that kind of flooding. I think it comes naturally that if you live on the coast, you live on a lake, right on some water, you're likely more prepared for maybe that water to be a threat, but inland, you're maybe less cognizant of that risk to yourself and to your property, especially during dry periods like this. And I think people being aware of the dry conditions, and that even though something hasn't been a threat in the past, it could be because of these conditions.
And speaking of flooding, and also going back to the ocean, we know that the Gulf of Maine is warming more quickly than pretty much any other place on Earth. How does that affect our future in terms of disaster preparedness? The ocean levels are higher. I know that. How else?
Right. You brought up the water warming up off of the state's coast, and that change likely isn't going to result in a huge impact or a huge change just one year to the next year. But over several years will start to cause impacts. And that warmer water is really what hurricanes like. We're pretty lucky that we have cold water, and the bathymetry off the state's coast helps us out a bit. So those hurricanes are often downgraded to tropical storms. And that said, tropical storms can still cause really great deal of damage, strong winds, storm surge, inland flooding, things like that. But as the water warms over several years, ocean levels rise, we might be more susceptible to hurricane force storms.
Eric, I want to talk about some things that people might not think about when they're purchasing homeowners insurance, when they're thinking about securing their home. I read this morning in some of the information from the Insurance Institute that garage doors are a really important piece of protection if you have a garage.
Yeah. Before that, though, I'd like to just add on to the potential for flooding. We've actually seen cases where construction has altered, has caused flooding downstream from the construction site. So, you know, if your property didn't flood before and something happens, you know, up elevation from you, we have actually seen floods occur where they never did. And at the end of the day, it was because of additional construction happening. So that my only point there is, you know, if it rains near your house, there's a potential for flooding, and you just need.
Yeah, let me ask you, what kind of construction are you talking about? What would be big enough to change the flood?
It was just a development. It wasn't, you know, it was highly localized. But again, this neighborhood had never flooded before, and some construction took place up elevation from them, and we got a significant rainstorm, and the properties in the development flooded, and that was so. Again, then they didn't have flood insurance, so it was a very tragic situation. But again, I can't stress enough, if it rains at your house, the potential for flooding is there, and people need to understand that whether or not they're covered for it. But back to your question about garage doors, you know, hurricanes are incredibly destructive. And in addition to flooding, you have the wind. Now, wind damage is covered, but when you specifically garage doors, there's a website and something called the Institute for Business and Home Safety, and that's a marvelous resource. They do testing. We've actually gone there, and they put a house in a wind tunnel, and they literally blow it apart, simulating a hurricane. And then they put a house in a different house that has undergone significant mitigation. And one of the things, you know, they tie down the roof, but they put in garage doors that are rated for wind. And if you can prevent your garage door from blowing in during a significant wind event like a hurricane, you can prevent your house from imploding, because once a garage door blows in, it's my understanding that the pressure builds up in the house significantly, and you can get serious damage. So, but you can either make sure when you put your garage door in, it's rated for a wind event, or you can actually, again, look at that website. They teach you how to protect your garage door when a storm is coming. But again, it's just an ounce of prevention really applies here.
How do you know if your garage door is rated for wind? If you've had one installed in the last 5 or 10 years, will it have been?
I would not assume that. It's supposed to be in the documentation on the door. That's my understanding. I would ask the question to who's installing a garage door, or I would check and do research. I would by no means assume that the garage door, even if it's a new garage door, is rated for wind. I think that's, you know, probably a reinforced door that you'd have to ask for proactively, and not assume that the door is rated.
And one of the other things I learned just this morning, when we're thinking about natural disasters, we naturally think about our homes, but think about your car as well. Tell me how, in addition to regular automobile insurance, we need to be thinking about our vehicles.
You do, and that's a little better story. If you have comprehensive coverage, which most people have with, you know, some people just have liability insurance, but most of us have comprehensive coverage. And if you have that on your car, it is covered for floods, which is good. If we think back to Houston a couple of years ago when they got 20 inches of rain, thousands of cars were flooded. And those who had comprehensive auto coverage, floods are covered. If you don't have what's called comprehensive auto coverage, floods are not covered. Again, it goes back to understanding what you're covered for and what you're not covered for.
All right. We're speaking about natural disaster preparedness on Maine Calling. If you have a question for one of our experts, give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. I want to turn to you, Joe. Some of the simplest things to do are really things that people might be doing just for cosmetic reasons around their home, correct? Trimming shrubs, clearing gutters.
Very true. Very true. And those kinds of things. So to add some numbers to a statement that Eric made just a minute ago about mitigation, we generally estimate that every dollar spent mitigating these different threats is worth about $6 if you were to have to repair or recover those costs after something's been damaged. So it's a great return on investment for some pretty simple things, whether it be an upgrade to the physical structure of your house, like a garage door, or whether it be something as simple as trimming trees, especially those that are directly around your house and could either fall on your house, branches could blow on your house, or ones that are around obviously working with professionals if you have power lines connected to your house and working to clear out some of those things. Loose clogged drains and rain gutters, other good places to look to remove debris and then help yourselves out with drainage and probably save yourself money in terms of repair and recovery after.
I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Joe. What are some things that what are some things people don't think about? What are some things you see over and over again that you wish people knew to think of before disaster strikes?
So, a couple simple things that I think that folks could do. You know, you mentioned a plan. Developing a family emergency plan, a family communications plan is really the cheapest and easiest thing you can do. There's a lot of templates online. You can go to our website, FEMA's website, several others. But making sure that you have a plan is something that's free and it's going to provide a lot of benefit to your family. And not only making sure you have that plan, but making sure that you've discussed it with your family and that you're practicing. And if there are issues with that plan, making adjustments to it. So that's something very cheap and easy. And one thing we see very frequently every single winter, the use of generators. Generators are a very common appliance in the state of Maine and used very frequently by a lot of Mainers. Making sure that those are properly installed by a professional, making sure that they're at least 15 feet away from your home and put into a well-ventilated area. We see carbon monoxide poisoning every single winter in situations where folks are using generators as a result of some kind of power outage.
I know the news stories with carbon monoxide poisoning, and I want to ask you, are these cases often where people have recently bought a generator and aren't familiar? Or are these people who have used generators for years and have just sort of dodged the bullet for years and used them improperly? I mean, I guess my question is, how common is it to use these generators improperly?
You know, I think it's pretty common. And I think it's probably both cases of people that are pretty experienced with them getting into situations where maybe you have a lot of snowfall and it blocks the exhaust, where in other situations you've not had any kind of ventilation issues. But now because of the snow around the generator, maybe you do have a ventilation issue there, as well as people that are new to the use of generators and are looking at things like convenience. You know, if it's raining and snowing, wouldn't it be nice to have your generator in the garage or someplace that's very easily covered and not taking into account that the carbon monoxide from that generator might get into the living space.
And Eric, let me ask you the same question. What do you see that people don't think of, but you see this over and over again?
Well, one of the really good things you can do is take a home inventory. You can either videotape it, or we actually have an app that you can download, or an Excel spreadsheet. But if you take an inventory of the contents of your house with pictures, then if you have an unfortunate event, you have a record of what you have, and you're well down the road to recovery. That I think is something people should do, and update it annually. Is again, we have an app on our website, and your policies and your insurance policy, you should keep that in a safe spot so you can refer to it if you need it, and don't file it away and then look for it after the damage. If you have a safe deposit box, I would recommend putting it there. Just again, that's an important, it's a legal contract, and it outlines your rights and more importantly, the insurance company's responsibilities when there's a loss. So again, take a home inventory, use the app, download our app, and keep your policy off-site, but know where it is and keep it handy.
And we'll try to get that onto our website and our Facebook page, the app. But, so many people have smartphones today, and it's much easier than it used to be to take videotape. It's not really videotape, but we still call it that. So you say just one day, when you have a few minutes, walk around your house and videotape each room.
Absolutely, because if you think about it, after a storm, particularly if you have a significant loss, the last thing you want to do is try and remember room by room what the contents were. And if you're concentrating on, how are you going to protect your family? What where are you going to eat that day? And that just takes one thing off your plate to worry about. And as you said, if you do it in your free time when you have nothing else going on and update it annually, you'll have it in the unfortunate circumstance you need it.
Well, we're talking with Eric Chapa, who's the superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance, and Joe Legee, deputy director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency, about being prepared for a natural disaster. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Email a brief, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, make it brief, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. No question is a dumb question. Go ahead and ask it. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Northeastern University's Rue Institute in Portland, working with businesses on the Resiliency Series to help communities during this crisis. roux.northeastern.edu. And Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco.
Much of Generation Z will vote for the first time in November, and they're not afraid to tell you where they stand.
When the Democratic Party coalesced around Joe Biden, I remember unregistering from the Democratic Party that day.
We hear from three Gen Z voters in Los Angeles about the issues that matter most to them this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up later today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
So to me, Maine is a place that thrives on collaboration and innovation. I think the thing that is most exciting to me about Maine is the fact that we innately love and care for our neighbors. And in that, we are creating and doing incredible things. I think downtown Lewiston is an incredible kind of example of the collaboration and neighborliness and partnership that happens here in Maine. Anytime I ever talk about Maine, I talk about the fact that we're neighborly, and that's something that we bring to all of our work. I'm Sam from Lewiston Auburn, and this is My Maine.
This Is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, how to prepare for a natural disaster. My guest, Joe Legee, who is Deputy Director at the Maine Emergency Management Agency, and Eric Chapa, Superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. As always, we want to hear from you. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Sue Baker. She is state coordinator for the National Flood Insurance Program. Sue, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a brief overview of how the National Flood Insurance Program works?
Sure. The National Flood Insurance Program was created by Congress in 1968 as a way to reduce future disaster payouts by making federally backed flood insurance available in participating communities. In order to participate in the NFIP, communities adopt a land use ordinance that meets federal and state standards for how property owners develop in the mapped flood zone. The ordinance contains elevation standards for buildings that apply in the flood hazard area as delineated by FEMA on flood insurance rate maps. The standard Congress chose to map is the 1% chance flood in any given year. The idea is that as new buildings are built and older ones are significantly improved, they're built with the lowest floor above the base flood elevation, which in turn means they should incur lesser or no damages in the next flooding event.
All right, I want to ask you, Sue, you know, I understand that there are maps that show where flood zones are and floodplains, but that many people who experience flooding are outside of those. Do people who are outside of those, do they qualify for flood insurance? Can they buy it?
They absolutely do. Once the community participates in the NFIP, flood insurance is available anywhere within that community.
How do you know if your community has participated in NFIP?
Most of the Maine communities do participate. There's only a small handful that don't, and the Land Use Planning Commission participates on behalf of all the unorganized territories.
I want to ask you, Eric, and Sue, if you wouldn't mind staying on the line with us, why isn't flood insurance part of homeowners insurance?
That's a good question, Jennifer. And one thing I want to clarify, not all water damage is excluded from your homeowner's policy. And, you know, if you have burst pipes from you know, in the winter, if they freeze and burst, or an overflow in the kitchen, or even a tree hitting your roof and water coming in, that is covered. So I want to make that clear. But flooding was considered such a significant event that it was uninsurable because of the magnitude of the losses. That was the thinking, but I have to say that thinking is beginning to change with the advent of better mapping, more analytic capacity by carriers, and we're starting to see it's in its early stages. But there is actually a private flood insurance market, In fact, in Maine, over 2,000 residential customers had private flood insurance last year in 2019. So we're starting to see that change, but basically it was considered uninsurable because of the magnitude of the losses. But I do think we're starting to see more and more insurance companies dip their toe in the water, for you to use a bad analogy, providing flood insurance. And I think eventually my hope is we'll get to what's called an all perils policy, because one of the things that does happen, particularly after a hurricane on the coast, is if the water damage was caused by a wind event, in other words, a tree went through your roof, it's covered. But if the water event is covered by flooding, it's not covered. And that's an unbelievable friction point. And I do believe in hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll see a policy that will cover flooding, so you get rid of that friction point when loss occurs.
Sure. I can imagine cases where both has happened. And how do you decide which has caused the damage, right?
Exactly. And we saw a lot of that in Superstorm Sandy in New Jersey and New York. A lot, you know, was it wind or flooding? And that, you know, in my opinion, if we can get rid of that friction point, consumers would be much better off.
Sue, let's ask you the really practical question. How does someone know whether or not they need to add flood insurance to their policy? How do I know if I'm at enough risk that I need to spend that money?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, it's really important that everybody knows their risk. There isn't any mandatory flood hazard disclosure at both the federal and the state level. So it's really important that people do their homework before signing on the dotted line to buy a property. Often people don't find out that they're in a flood zone until they're well into the lending process. This is way too late. Flood insurance can add a significant amount of expense to a monthly mortgage payment that they may not have been anticipating. So people often find themselves in a difficult financial situation. So where do people go to find out if they're in the flood zone? If they're buying a property, ask the realtor to help them with this. All communities should have their flood maps readily available at the town office so that people can walk in and view them. So that's a good place to start. FEMA also has a map service center online where the map panels can be viewed. And at the state level, we also have an online flood hazard mapper. So our data on our mapper should always be confirmed by looking at the actual FEMA map. And lastly, they can contact Janet or I directly. We're certainly always happy to help anyone when they need it.
All right. Well, Sue, how do they contact you?
We can be reached at the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry at 287-2801, or they can contact me at sue.baker@maine.gov.
Great, and we will add that information to our resources for today's program. Thank you so much for giving us a call, Sue. Sue Baker, the state coordinator for the National Flood Insurance Program. Joe, she was talking about that you can walk into your town office and ask to look at the flood maps. Right now during COVID, many people can't walk into their office, but they can go online at MEMA. Can they find those flood maps through MEMA?
You know, that is a great question, and one that I'll have to take a look at, see if we have those cross-posted. And I would say the FEMA resource is a great one. And if it's not up on our website, we'll make sure that we at least cross-post that FEMA resource.
All right. We'll go to an email from Mary. Thanks for the show. I have struggled to understand my policy. I try reading it, but there are so many amendments and riders and cross-references in terms of art. I can't follow it. And my agent, who really just wants to make the sale, doesn't always describe all the issues. Is there anything requiring plain language from these insurance companies? Eric.
Well, unfortunately, it's a legal contract at the end of the day, so it's sometimes it's cumbersome to read. But having said that, we actually, every homeowner policy in Maine that is sold has to be approved by our office, and we do work to try to make them readable to the average consumer. But having said that, we understand that sometimes it is confusing, and I would encourage Mary to call our office. 800-300-5000. We do have people who can answer her questions specifically as it relates to her policy. And, you know, it's disappointing to hear that about her agent, because most of the agents I encounter, you know, they consider that they're professionals and they want to answer their consumers' questions. So maybe she'd want to look for a different agent, because most agents will bend over backwards, has been my experience, to answer the questions. But again, she can use us as a resource. That's what we're here for.
I'm going to go to Lisa on Facebook. She asks, is a metal roof better protection from wind than asphalt? I'm not sure which of you to throw this question to. Joe, is this a question for you?
I would defer to Eric on that one, you know, to see if that, I'm not sure structurally what the difference is there. Eric, do you have any thought on that?
No. I mean, especially as it relates to wind, I'd hesitate to venture. It's my understanding that it's how you tie the roof down in terms of, you know, is it tied down to the walls and to the foundation? And I'm doing a great disservice to the actual construction engineering, but that's the concept of a roof against a wind damage, is how it's tied into the structure. And again, that website, the Institute for Business and Home Safety, has some really good visuals and really understandable short videos on how to actually retrofit a roof to make it more safe for wind. But I want to be careful here. I'm not a construction expert, so I don't want to venture too far afield. But I would encourage the person to look at that website. There's some really good information there.
All right. Tony Payne with Memic writes, in the aftermath of a disaster, homeowners and businesses need to be careful about who they hire to do the repair work. Have a short list of contractors handy and be sure they have workers' comp insurance, so you become responsible for injuries to a worker on your property. Wow, Eric, something else to think about.
Yeah, it is. And Maine does not license contractors. So it's really, Tony Breeze is a good point. If you can, add another thing to the checklist, but if you do have contractors you've worked with before, keep their name and number handy, and you would want to call them as soon as possible after an event, because they're getting incredibly busy very, very quickly. And he's right. You want to make sure they're fully insured, because, when someone gets hurt, they're looking for to be compensated. And if they have workers' comp insurance, that's one less thing to worry about. But that's good advice from Tony.
Nicole on Facebook asked, could you please provide the link to the home inventory app referenced today? So I want to return to that, Joe. How does somebody find the app that you were talking about? I think that was you who was talking about that?
No, that was me, Jennifer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Eric. That's a problem when we're not all in the studio together. COVID radio. Go ahead.
Go to the Bureau of Insurance website on Maine. Go to Maine.gov and get to the Bureau of Insurance. And then on the left side, you'll see a thing for consumer information. And you click on that. And then when you go to homeowners, you'll see I'm reconstructing my mind because I looked at it before going on air. But there is, once you get there, they'll say inventory. And then the apps are there, and you can just click on them, download them. The one for Android is being repaired now, but the other app is up and running, it's my understanding.
And all right. Great. We'll go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Go ahead.
The simple solution for coastal flooding areas is not to buy there and not to build there. And if you build $1 million house and then the wind blows it down, it's not fair to the taxpayers to give you a subsidized return to your original property.
Larry, I don't think you're the only person who feels that way. Joe, thoughts?
Yeah, so no, it's a very that's definitely an issue that we have. You know, people wanting to build on Maine's beautiful coastline right up against the water. I'll let Eric comment if he has any on kind of building codes and things like that on the coastline. But one important point that I'd throw out there is we do see a lot of folks from out of state building on the coastline, building vacation homes and things like that. And one important point is that if there is damage to that home and it's not the primary residence, It is not eligible for public assistance in terms of some of the federal assistance that's available after a disaster.
That's a reasonable point, but one of the things that we look at as insurance regulators, in fact, on the national level, climate risk and resiliency was pre-COVID the number one priority across the nation. It's risk-based pricing. I mean, if you're going to build in a vulnerable area, you should pay insurance commensurate with that risk. That's one thing we look at. The other thing, though, is what sort of construction are you building, a resilient property? And I think it wasn't this year's storm, but last year there was an incredible picture in Florida where someone, a new construction, had built up to code and probably even exceeded code in terms of fortifying their house. And literally the entire neighborhood was obliterated by a storm, except that house was left standing. So if you build, the two takeaways there, if you're going to build in a vulnerable area, you ought to be, the risk, you ought to be paying a risk premium for it. But you can build in such a manner that you can reduce your premium if you make the house so resilient. And there are ways to do that.
What are your questions about flood insurance, preparing for a natural disaster, or anything related to those topics? We have our superintendent of insurance on today and the deputy director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, if you hurry, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Trueline, a full-service marketing and branding agency who believes in the value of local, independent journalism. Online at wearetrueline.com. Bristol Seafood of Maine, dedicated to bringing restaurant-quality meals to your kitchen with My Fish Dish, found in the freezer at your local Hannaford. And Starfire Storage, offering transportation, handling, and storage of fine art collections. Details at starfire.me.
Astronomer William Cranch Bond was born in Falmouth on September 9, 1789. Largely self-educated, Bond was a watchmaker who became interested in astronomy. He built a home observatory that was one of the finest in the United States at the time. Bond independently discovered many comets, and in recognition of his efforts, he was appointed the first astronomical observer at Harvard College in 1839. He became the first director of the Harvard Observatory in 1847 and was elected an associate of Britain's Royal Astronomical Society 2 years later, the first American so honored. After William died in 1859, his son George Phillips succeeded him as director of the Harvard Observatory.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Bernsteinshire and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine.
Most people agree our country is polarized.
America has become we the parties.
Right.
And it's not we the people.
And it's hard to talk about.
Is there one thing that you respect about the way that I see the world?
No.
But there are those who are trying to talk and to listen. I'm Elise Hugh. Join me for One Small Step, courageous conversations across a growing divide from NPR and StoryCorps.
And that's coming up later this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic, things to think about when it comes to the possibility of a natural disaster happening here in Maine. Joining me, Joe Legee, who is Deputy Director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency, and Eric Choppa, Superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joe, I think a lot of people have come to look to MEMA and then FEMA nationally as the place that's going to help us when a natural disaster strikes. What are the limitations? What can really be done with the resources that are out there?
Yeah, so a couple points there. You know, I think the biggest limitation is timeliness, which is why generally the rule of thumb, we want folks to be prepared to shelter in place for at least 72 hours. And even it would definitely be preferable to be able to shelter in place for even longer than that. and really have that emergency kit built with all the food, medications, and other things that your family is going to need, and your family to include your pets. So I think timeliness is a limitation in terms of being able to get resources moving. And I'll also call to mention that, you know, we look at the state and federal level, there are also dedicated emergency managers at the county and local level. So each of our counties has an emergency management agency that can provide important guidance and answer questions. And then each municipality within the state of Maine, by statute, has a local emergency manager. That's often the fire chief, but not always. And that person can also point individuals from that community towards different resources.
I'll go to Gabe, who's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Gabe. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was just curious what's being done more on the local level. I live here in Scarborough, visit Pine Point Beach all the time, and you see a lot of these coastal communities building new developments. A lot of times these are pretty low-lying areas that are going to be highly susceptible to sea level rise. And so I'm just thinking, you know, ultimately, who pays the cost of that? What are some other alternatives we can do at the more local level to both protect natural buffers, but also limit the types of developments that are going to be more vulnerable to these changes? Thank you.
Thanks, Gabe. Joe?
Yeah, generally local code comes into play there, and certainly that's a part of the conversation. Governor Mills has initiated a climate council in the state of Maine, and they're looking at several of those kinds of topics and issues. Where we intersect with some of that type of development is really on the public infrastructure side, and as it relates to making mitigating different threats, so looking at flooding and figuring out what kinds of actions can be taken to really make public infrastructure more resilient in the state of Maine, and then how we can apply that to some of the grant programs and funding available at the federal and other levels.
Gabe, thanks for your question. Question here from Rich. Why do I have to pay flood insurance when there is no chance of my home being flooded? Eric?
Well, the short answer is if he has a mortgage, then the bank may require it. And that's just a fact that, you know, the bank requires any mortgage they write to have flood insurance. But if he doesn't have a mortgage, he doesn't need to have flood insurance. Again, that's why I recommend review your coverage and make your decisions appropriately. But, you know, again, banks in many cases require it, not all cases, but many cases. But if you don't have a mortgage, there's no requirement that you have flood insurance.
All right. We'll go to William calling from Cornish. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. Jennifer, I'm coming from two different directions, and one is a background as a nationally certified bicycle safety instructor, and one who has done extreme cycling, including during winter months, some long distances. And when you're on a bicycle, you're pretty much on your own. And so personal preparedness is key. And on that note, looking at the fact that our society is predominantly mobile, and the idea of a crisis happening when we're at home, where all our preparedness is really kind of a toss of the dice. And so partly out of my bicycle experience, in my car, I always carry a pack. I always carry headlamps, gloves. And the idea of the pack and the headlamp is if you're carrying something, your hands aren't free. The idea of the gloves is that your hands are tools. You want to protect them. And again, the idea of a crisis is, you know, exactly that. You know, it's not normal. It's everything but normal. One other note on that. I heard your program on bicycling a couple weeks ago. Nice. Visibility is our first line of defense. And so just having emergency visible clothing anytime we're doing anything that has potential risk. That was the first thing. The other thing is pretty simple, but on the idea of this whole flooding, that's all I've heard through the program, and I'm like, okay. you know, we're used to our local catastrophes, but there is, you know, the very reality of a totally unexpected catastrophe, whether that's an earthquake or even a tsunami, And I would just encourage people to do some research on Cumbre Verde or Veje. I'm not Spanish. And in the Canary Islands. And it's a geological phenomena. Wikipedia did a nice job on talking about different similar ones. It's called a mega tsunami. Very real phenomena, has happened all throughout history, well recorded recently. And this is a potential out there that would affect the whole East Coast. And there'd be about potentially 10 hours to respond to it. And on
William,
that final note.
Yeah. And yeah, let me ask you, you're talking about being prepared when you're mobile, which I really like, because, you know, so many of us spend so much time on our cars, especially when it's not a pandemic. Would you add to that headlamp and gloves, a blanket and some water?
Absolutely. Just some basic foods that you can recycle out, you know, and replace, like Clif bars, you know, energy bars, things like energy drinks. And, you know, just keep them, just recycle them into your regular diet and put fresh ones in. So, you know, a year down the road, you aren't drinking something that, you know, it's like, ugh. yeah, absolutely. Blankets and like a bivy sack, you know, something if you get stuck in your car, you've got, you know, some personal emergency. Oh, shelter, a poncho, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, and a replacement of clothes.
Thank you so much, William. Yeah, I want to turn to Joe with the idea of the chances of some sort of really, really, really unusual event, one of these big waves. Is that something MEMA plans for?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you brought up a number of really great points. So awesome. So, yeah, I mean, really big waves, tsunamis was mentioned, and we have had tsunamis in the state's history, and luckily not huge ones like they've seen in the West Coast and in other areas. But that's certainly a possibility. One of the other possibilities is what's called a meteo tsunami, and that's a tsunami that has an even shorter amount of time for notice and preparedness purposes. And it's a tsunami that's a result of a weather pattern, and it's very unpredictable in nature. And we would have very little notice for such an event to occur. A lot of the actions kind of in response to that kind of event, some are pretty similar to hurricane evacuation. So getting away from low-lying areas, coastal areas, is really the primary piece there. And of course, the bigger the wave, the further inland you're going to need to go. So that is an event. And I think an important point there is that what we refer to as all hazards planning in the state. So look at some of the common things, like was touched on, having a kit, and having a kit with you wherever you are, whether that's a car, on a bike, at home, at work, wherever you are. That's really an all hazards action you can take that's going to prepare you for anything in between a tsunami, sharks, flooding, whatever the hazard may be, because the reality is you're never going to be prepared for every potential hazard that could happen. But I think it is important to have those conversations, especially within your community, so that you know what the risks are within your area and you are prepared for them.
Sherry writes in an email, how would your guests advise someone whose home is situated directly under very large trees, but is also on a lake where shoreland zoning largely prohibits tree removal? Joe?
And that is certainly a difficult challenge. And I know as a homeowner that tree removal can also be pretty costly, to actually have done, you know, and done professionally and done the right way. So that's a challenging one. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not an expert on zoning and things like that. That's certainly a conversation I'd engage with other community members on and community and town officials on to really describe the threat and the risk and to look at some of the options for that. But really making sure that, you know, even if you can't remove the tree, that maybe certain limbs that are putting your property, your power lines, critical pieces of infrastructure like that are at least taken care of, if not the whole tree.
A question here from Lucy. I'm curious about climate change migration. Is there evidence of people moving to Maine to escape frequent natural disasters in other parts of the country? Not sure if this is something MEMA tracks, Joe, but is this something you've been following?
You know, it's not something that we're necessarily seeing a massive, you know, upturn in people moving to the state of Maine. I think it is a pretty common thought that, especially during acute events, that we do see an influx of people from especially the New England region into Maine. That was certainly a concern at the onset of COVID, that we would see travelers from other states moving up to Maine from an area that maybe had more cases to one that had less. So that is something we do consider travelers, and also, you know, the movement of permanent residents into the state of Maine, and we incorporate that into our emergency plans. And I'd say communities should be aware of that too. If you're a community that sees a lot of tourism or anticipates seeing more tourism, work that into your emergency plans and how that could change what some of your risks are as a community.
All right, we'll go to Rich calling from Perry. Hi, Rich, go ahead.
Yeah, I was the one that called about why do I have flood insurance. Well, what ended up happening was I didn't have flood insurance until they redrew the flood map, and then the area where my house is located was in the flood. Okay, that's the answer to that question. The second one is anybody can go to ready.gov, and FEMA has developed pages there on how to prepare for an emergency, what to do, and how to build a kit. In fact, this week, it is how to build a kit theme week for National Preparedness Month. So ready.gov and go look for build a kit.
Well, Rich, thanks. Yeah, thanks for calling. We just have a few seconds left. And Eric, I want to turn back to you and talk to you about a statistic that's right in front of me, that there are something like 7,700 flood insurance policies in Maine, but that possibly 55,000 structures at risk. We're talking about a lot of people.
Exactly. That's my point, is you really need to assess what risk you want to assume yourself or what risk you want to buy insurance for. And I go back to that event in Houston where they got 20 inches of rain in one storm, which is almost unimaginable. I mean, if you think of those, a storm like that, God forbid, if it ever happened in Maine, those 48,000 odd homes who have a risk of flooding, who don't have flood insurance, they could be, you know, life-altering events in a tragic way. So it's really, you want to make these decisions beforehand. That statistic really tells you there's a lot of exposure that people hopefully are willingly undertaking. But the emphasis, you need to do your research and make the decision, not now find out after.
Yeah. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. That was Eric Chapa, the superintendent of the Maine Bureau of Insurance, and Joe Legee, deputy director of the Maine Emergency Management Agency. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.